You're listening to Radio Influence.
Welcome back to another podcast from Tetra Health Centers, the Medical Marijuana Podcast. I'm Scott Ledger, alongside my partner in crime,
Tracy Lee Young,
from Tetra Health Centers. By the way, you know, we forgot to say the slogan last time.
We're natural health. I totally forgot. We're compassionate care and natural health come together. You know, I just keep thinking of that. That is our slogan. That was the birth of Tetra. You know, we wanted to have compassionate care because so often people think of marijuana and doctors and growing as a money market. And that's, you know, of course, money makes the world go round, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here to truly care for patients, and I want to be the gold standard of care, offering true compassion to those who need it. So natural health is when you don't really necessarily rely on big pharma and pharmaceuticals, where you do look to nature. So cannabis being a miracle plant and Tetra offering compassionate care. We do say Tetra is where compassionate care and natural health come together. But truly, there are so many things that I think about. You know, my goal is to help people remember life before their meds and get back into loving the life they're living. And so many people don't, you know, they aren't able to live the life that they're living. And my goal is to give them an option that allows them to get back to enjoying.
You know, America is a capitalist country, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with making a buck, but it's twice or 10 times more enriching if you make a living and you grow, or you're a doctor, or you have a clinic like Tracy Lee. Nothing wrong with making a dollar, but you're helping people the right way, and you're not walking them down the wrong path.
Right.
And that's what I like about the plant. Last week, we had a guest on named Dan Loveland, and he was like a walking encyclopedia, and he was our first live testimonial of someone who not only knows a lot about it, but it actually is using the plant and the medicine. So as those stories grow, part of what this podcast is going to do, not what we're going to do tonight, is those live testimonials. We might be live at an event. We might be out at a concert on the weekend. We might be looking for people to talk to us. Hey, sit down and tell us about your story. What do you think of medical marijuana? What don't you know? And you'd be surprised. And that's what I'm learning.
Exactly. And you know, Scott, I want to encourage people to reach out to us with their stories. I hear stories every single day from our patients, and I welcome people sharing their experience with using medical cannabis and how it's changed their life and how it's changed their treatment of the condition that they're suffering from.
Well, a lot of people are changing their mind because, you know, they're being empowered with knowledge, and I think that's the neatest thing. And, you know, we're going to play some videos tonight. And we'll put all the links to the videos right there at radioinfluence.com. We'll briefly touch on some stories. We'll put all the links there as well as we bring these are testimonials. And some of these are visual, very visual in nature. So I want to make sure that as you listen to the podcast, that you click on the links, because you're going to see some modern day miracles. You're going to see a child, you know, that is literally has epileptic seizures all the time so badly that they actually have to wear almost what is considered a football helmet.
Correct.
And you watch them banging their head. They came up with that. Well, someone else came up with putting some tinctures, or it's actually, he takes a little spray.
He does.
Yeah, he takes a little spray.
Yes.
And you see him sitting at the table with his dad, and his dad goes, "Hey, are we going to school today?" And he's like, "Oh, it's Saturday." You know, where normally he would never say that and just be so normal.
Exactly.
And things like that. And we're talking about people changing their minds. And our first video is a very famous person who changed their minds. And I'm not into people that are famous unless they can use their fame for something that's good. Make their money, have your fame, enjoy all the perks of being famous. And Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who is a very famous physician, he's been on CNN for many, many years, actually was anti-cannabis. And you'll see in this video, and Wolf Blitzer walks him through it. You know, why did you change your mind? And it's the same thing. He all the research he was looking at was negative, but most of it was sponsored by pharmaceutical companies.
Exactly.
He actually goes outside the country.
Yep.
And talks to people outside of the propaganda machine. And without further ado, for the next 5 minutes, here's Sanjay Gupta telling you why he changed his mind.
Our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, has been working on a very important CNN documentary about medical marijuana, and it's called Weed. It debuts this weekend, but the headline is so big, it can't wait. In a commentary you could read right now on CNN.com, Sanjay explains in an article he entitles, Why I Changed My Mind on Weed. In it, he writes, and I'm quoting, I apologize because I didn't look hard enough. Until now, I didn't look far enough. I was too dismissive of the loud chorus of legitimate patients whose symptoms improved on cannabis. Sanjay is back here in the Situation Room to tell us why. You were referring to an article you wrote back in 2009 for Time magazine, Sanjay, which was entitled, Why I Would Vote No on Pot. So tell us briefly, why did you change your mind?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it was in that quote. When you look at the literature surrounding marijuana, if you do a search for them through the medical journals, you know, some 20,000 papers would pop up. And I was keeping up steadily on the scientific literature. But what I was realizing was that the vast majority of these studies talked about the harm, the perils, the problems with marijuana. A very small percentage, less than 10%, close to 6%, actually evaluated benefit. So when you looked at all these studies in aggregate, Wolf, you would think that there was a distorted picture. You would think there was a lot more harm with marijuana than potential benefit. But it wasn't until I started looking at laboratories outside the United States, smaller laboratories that were doing amazing work, listening to the chorus of legitimate patients for whom not only did marijuana work, it was the only thing that worked. And that was quite stunning to me. I also looked closely at the DEA scheduling policy. They classify marijuana as a Schedule I substance, saying it's in the category of the most dangerous substances out there. And when I looked carefully at that, I found there was really no scientific evidence to say it was that dangerous, that it had high abuse potential, and that it had no medical applications. I believe it does have medical applications, and that's, I just thought, was an important message to get out there.
And you also conclude, Sanjay, and I read your excellent article, you conclude that in certain cases, medical marijuana is even more effective than various pharmaceutical drugs, right?
Absolutely. And this is, again, I think very important for people to hear. The medical community is starting to understand this better. But this idea that, for example, neuropathic pain, that's this terrible sort of burning, lancinating pain patients have described to me. Oftentimes, these patients, they're miserable. They get narcotics, morphine, OxyContin, Dilaudid. These types of medications don't work, maybe at all, but certainly not after a few months. People can develop tolerance to them. And you come to find that marijuana, in a percentage of patients, not only does it work better than these narcotics, it's much safer. Because on those narcotics, Wolf, you and I have talked about this, there's a death, an accidental overdose death from prescription medications every 19 minutes in this country. Those are dangerous medications. You know, they have a role, but they can be dangerous. Whereas with marijuana, I couldn't find a single confirmed overdose death. So you have something that works better, may work when other things don't, and probably much safer. And again, I think that's important for both patients and the medical community to hear.
All right, so medical marijuana serves a useful purpose, you conclude. What about recreational marijuana? What are the pros and cons?
Well, you know, I do make a distinction between these things, and I think it's important. I mean, I really am approaching the medical marijuana angle of this in many ways because I've seen so many legitimate patients with legitimate problems not be able to get the treatment they needed. But so I do make a distinction. But look, if you want to talk about, you want to raise the issue of moral equivalence with recreational marijuana and other substances that are out there, again, marijuana is considered a drug of high abuse, the highest abuse. Dependence rates are around 9%. As compared to alcohol, which is closer to 15%, heroin, 23-25%, cocaine, 20%. So it's probably not as problematic as those other types of drugs. I'm concerned about it as far as its use for young people with a developing brain still up to age mid-20s. But, you know, again, from a moral equivalent standpoint, you'd be hard-pressed to find additional harm from this in adults as compared to some of the other things.
Sanjay Gupta changed his mind. I don't know who the next famous person will be. I do know that Michael J. Fox, who's had Parkinson's for a long time, and his Parkinson's Foundation has garnered, and that was an old interview I watched, about $850 million in donations. His
exactly.
fame, he's using his fame and his own, you know, he went, he didn't, I think he, what, took 7-8 years to go public?
He 7 years. He did. Yes.
Something like that. And now he's his foundation only recently has endorsed medical marijuana.
Correct.
For Parkinson's.
Correct.
Because people are seeing it. And by the way, one of the videos you will see towards the end is a woman talking about sneaking cannabis into her husband's cookies because he didn't want to try it on his own. And he was on all kinds of Parkinson's meds. And then I don't want to ruin the video for you, but testimonials from first person narrative. I say it all the time. That way, let's say you're skeptical about something, Tracy Lee. You know, are you going to go by some guy trying to sell you something? Or are you going to go by someone who goes, oh my God, it changed my life. It changed my wife's life. It changed that kind of stuff. Those are the stories that are really going to change someone's mind.
They are. Or maybe they aren't. And I don't judge either way. As long as somebody does have both sides of the information, make an educated choice. And whatever you choose, nobody should judge you for. But if the option is there and it will allow you to enjoy the remainder of your life, I say go for it.
The next topic we want to talk about is when there's money involved, you're always going to have con men.
You are. And, you know, there's always going to be bad actors out there and people that don't always have the best interest of others. My goal is to help people understand the plant, understand the option for treatment, understand how it is legal for them, and how they should have a voice in fighting any opposition in making it more accessible to those that need it.
The Miami New Times, this is a story about someone who's been disbarred and they're going to serve some time and pay a lot of fines because he was, you know, going to people and saying, oh, would you like to grow your own cannabis? Here's a certificate. Give me $800 and now you can legally grow your own medicine. Now, these people were naive enough, of course, and they're not being charged. Or some of them are at least being told, you know, you can't do what you're doing.
A few of those patients came into my clinic to see a doctor.
No kidding.
And they were robbed of that money that they didn't have, but they were desperate to be able to utilize this option for treatment. And again, you know, it's a tragedy that these bad actors are taking advantage, and it gives the entire industry a bad name.
Well, the story is, it's not depressing. It's a good story. You know, every time a con man is caught, but when they're preying on the weak, That's that really gets me going.
It does. It makes me angry.
Really gets me going. We'll put, by the way, all the links will be at radioinfluence.com. When you find the show there, underneath the show description, the links will be in order. In other words, Sanjay Gupta's video and then this storyline as well. So we don't necessarily have to read the whole story to you, but if you're curious about what we're talking about each time we mention a story, the link will be right there for you. Up next is a video that I actually saw for the first time on your Facebook page for Tetra.
Oh, really? Which one is this?
It's the one about the 8-month-old where the tumor shrunk in the brain.
Very powerful. Very powerful.
And, you know, how do you give medicine to an 8-month-old?
With a pacifier.
A great idea.
It is.
What a great idea.
How life-changing for the parents.
Yes.
You know, their life was altered. Of course, any parent's life is altered the day a child is born. But then when you have a child that is high needs, you basically lose your life to care for the life of your child. And these people were given back their life and their child was able to have a life. Amazing.
I have a tendency to think of business ideas and then spit them out. And
sure.
I never make any money because someone else does it before me. But here's an idea. The pacifier is hollow and it has a measured dose of cannabis on the inside.
Makes sense.
You don't even have to put it on the outside. Something like that. Those stories as the one you're going to hear, the audio from this. And remember, we put all the links so you can watch. There's, you know, video involved. And, you know, this is a audio podcast only. But here's the story. And it's very, very inspiring.
5 or 6 years ago, I refused to approve of it for a fellow physician. Currently, my youngest patient is 8 months old. Had a very massive, centrally located, inoperable brain tumor. And the father's strength to, well, I was quite a skeptic 5 or 6 years ago, I refused to approve of it for a fellow physician. Currently, my youngest patient is 8 months old, had a very massive, centrally located, inoperable brain tumor. And the father's strength to push ahead and get approval from someone and to begin treatment. And the father was successfully able to avoid chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery, and within a couple of months had reduced the tumor by 1%, and 4 months had reduced it essentially to zero. And this child, because of that, is not going to have the long-term side effects that would come from very high-dose chemotherapy or radiation.
By the way, I want to pull up, too, an image that you sent along to us to show our viewers of the difference of the brain tumor and what it was that happened there after a couple weeks. Can you explain that for us in more detail?
Yes, that large white center area is the tumor, and they were putting cannabinoid oils on the baby's pacifier twice a day, increasing the dose, and it was a 3.8% CBD, so it was a high CBD tincture or oil. And within 2 months, there was a dramatic reduction, enough that the pediatric oncologist allowed them to go ahead with not pursuing traditional therapy. And within 4 months, you can see that the tumor is essentially gone. And then by 8 months, the normal architecture had resumed. And at this point, the risk of the MRI is so high that they don't, they really don't want to do any more MRIs because of the risk of the analysis. So currently, the child's being called a miracle baby. And I would have to agree that this is the type of response that we should be insisting is frontline therapy for all children before they launch off on medications that have horrific long-term side effects.
As we bounce from story to story, Tracy Lee, you know, we mentioned a lawyer that was shady. And now there's always going to be a counter to a market. There's always going to be that side market, you know. And when someone says synthetic marijuana or artificial marijuana or something that's been sprayed on top of something else and people smoke
plant fibers.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. And, you know, people are having hospitalization. I remember reading an article about
89 people were hospitalized and there are two dead in Illinois just from synthetic marijuana. Why not just allow people to access a plant that grows in nature, that is miraculous, that can heal, and that there is no recorded death from using? But now we've got all these people that are losing their life or have lost their life because there were some bad actors that wanted to capture the money in a market that should never have been legalized.
A lot of these stories, I follow a lot of cannabis links on my Twitter page. I must follow about 60 different ones.
Okay.
And some of it's just, you know, recreational. Sure. Some of it's growers. A lot of the stories are inspirational. This is where we get a lot of our material, is we go to these social media places and, you know, a lot of people think of normal, you know, everybody knows what normal is, but now there's so many subgroups of web pages. And, you know, I go to a lot of these people, 25,000 followers, 70,000 followers. So the word is spreading.
People want to know.
But the bad news is spreading too. And people want to make money. And
exactly.
Where do you think politicians will sit on a story like that?
You know, I think it's going to vary from individual to individual. But what I can say is I have met with many senators, many House representatives, the governor. And what I can tell you is that I've had several encounters with these legislators, senators, in fact, who the day of our meeting, one in particular, his father just went home with hospice. And he said to me as he walked in, I wasn't sure I should keep our appointment. My father may be dead by the time I get home today. And that was so powerful to me. And as we spoke about what Tetra does, he said, honestly, I had no idea what I was voting for. And this has been a real eye-opener. And I had that encounter with several legislators. And what I want to say is that our goal as a community, anybody that has knowledge and information about this plant, even your own testimony about the experience that you've had as it's helped you treat your condition, these senators need to be educated more than anything. I don't really think they are against it as much as they don't understand it. So we all need to educate all those around us so that there can be smarter decisions made. And right now, I think that decisions are made based on how many voters are going to vote for us if we say yay or if we say nay. And it shouldn't be that way.
No, not at all. You know, we're kind of bouncing back and forth on this podcast from an inspirational and a wonderful story to the negative side. But, you know, that is the yin and yang of any subject matter. And let's get to a good one. Not only in every state that has at least medical marijuana, are opiate deaths and opiate usage dropping.
I love that.
Anywhere from 10 to 25%.
Right. And using cannabis to help treat. Exactly.
Yes. And that's why Big Pharma doesn't like it. Their cash registers aren't ringing as much. But the great news is its lives are being saved. Well, there's also a story that big alcohol doesn't like. Binge drinking.
Correct.
Is down in every single state as well because people love an altered state of consciousness.
Right.
And binge drinking, by the way, is for a man having at least 5 drinks in a 2-hour period, 4 drinks for a woman in a 2-hour period. In other words, as the guys at the sports bar say, let's pound some beers. You know, we're not sipping them like we're having a cognac. You
They're
know?
Definitely not connoisseurs.
Yes. And that's what they call binge drinking. What if you look at the statistics, and this comes from the CDC, you know, they monitor these kind of things. You know, is that many people have a alcohol arrest or a traffic accident or alcohol poisoning?
Right.
These are starting to drop. And this is going to hurt them. 251 million, I'm sorry, billion with a B, dollars a year for alcohol. That is a lot of money. Okay, we are drinking country. We do. We're, you know, women love wine, guys like beer. You know, you go to the beach, I like a good margarita or rum runner. There's nothing wrong with, you know, drinking responsibly. And a lot of this, by the way, in the statistics are college kids and younger is because they're getting able to go to that altered state of consciousness with something safe,
right?
And they're not combining it as much or with something else. So as we see these statistics roll in, we realize the good side is deaths are dropping, binge drinking's dropping, opiate use is dropping, but it's also firing up the opposition.
And I'd be willing to, or I wouldn't be willing to, how about if I say this? I'd be interested to find out if anybody ever does a study about the drop in violence. As you know, anybody
domestic
who's
violence.
Doing their binge drinking, they get very aggressive.
You've seen a bar fight or two.
Absolutely. But can you imagine if you've got people that are sitting around and they've had some medical cannabis or even non-medical cannabis? What are they going to do? They are going to hug everybody in the room
That's
and they're
right.
going to wave as they drive away.
Hey,
you
man,
know?
Do you want to fight? No, me neither. No.
I mean, it's so true.
I want a pizza.
It's a beautiful
alcohol
thing.
Alcohol completely affects the brain differently, different receptors in different parts of the brain. So, yeah, you know, name two people that smoked or used some medical cannabis that actually got in a bar fight. I've never seen it. I don't think I ever will. And, you know, we're kind of joking about it, but it's true.
It is true.
It's absolutely true. It affects the brain differently, and it doesn't, you know, get you agitated. It doesn't make you aggressive. It does the exact opposite. We're going to go to a video next. This is from a CBS a TV station in Colorado, and a lot of people are starting to hear, especially, you know, and I don't know as much about the THC and the CBDs and the CBNs, but we're starting to see that many parents that have children that are epileptic and having seizures are seeing results. But there's another story as well. Autism. Yeah. And I didn't know that much about it. But again, you know, let's say there was 5 stories. And, you know, now there's 100. And pretty soon there'll be 500 stories. And this is, you know, this is the ammunition for what people like you and I want to do is here's another story. Look at what happened to this child. Look how this autistic child just snapped out of it. And I don't know the science behind it.
It's neurological, you know, and this plant is definitely addresses neurological issues. So absolutely it's going to. And when you consider the rise in autism over the last many years, you absolutely have to find something that works. And cannabis does.
Well, you know, people that are on the conspiratorial side, we'll look at vaccines and stuff. And we're not going to argue that.
No.
We're not here to argue that. But and I know people that have autistic children, too. I know listeners of my old show, my radio shows, my podcast, all the different things. You know, I'll put stuff out there and they'll say, my child has autism. And I'll say, have you looked into cannabis? And they're like, really? And I'm like, trust me, I'm just learning about this, too, because I've seen the epilepsy. And again, epilepsy, neurological as well.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. Neurons firing. It's not working right in the brain. And that's another thing. So if it can you know, if let's say the 10,000 autistic children, if it can help 100.
Correct. Well, if it can help one.
Yes, absolutely.
Just one is all it takes, you know.
All right, let's go to this video and we'll check out that story.
My name is Elise DelFrancia. I'm the owner of Copycat Showroom downtown Palm Springs. And my husband and I owned the property here. And my husband was afflicted with Parkinson's about 5 years ago. He found out that he had it. And he was in denial for a good 2 years and medicated himself with alcohol and would laugh about that, you know, alcohol's the only thing that makes him feel good. But after a while, you can't drink like that. So anyway, we had found out about medical marijuana in California. We lived in Las Vegas at that time. And when I realized that it was legal in the state of California, I gave him some, unbeknownst to himself. And within 45 minutes after eating a pancake with marijuana on it, he stopped shaking. And I walked over to his ottoman and sat down in front of him. And I said, "How do you feel?" And he just put his hands out and said, "Look, look, I'm not shaking." And he had a smile on his face. He felt great. He did not move from that chair for 6 hours. So that was my light bulb moment. I knew that then I was onto something that was going to relieve his pain and suffering, because it's horrible to have Parkinson's disease and not have any relief. And I feel that this is something that helps so many people in so many ways with pain and suffering. And to take some of the medication, the expensive pharmaceutical drugs are destroying people's lives, not really helping them. Either they can't afford the pharmaceutical drugs, or it's damaging their kidneys or damaging their bodies in some way. So I'm behind this cause 100%, 110%. And anything that I can do, I will do. And I urge anybody that is interested in learning more about the true effects of medical marijuana, not what the government wants you to know, is to join in on this. You can't put people in jail for just trying to find some relief with what ails them. So there you have it, Lanny.
What goes through your mind when I tell you that my 11-year-old twins are using marijuana? Do you think to yourselves, "Oh my God, the drug problem in the U.S. is worse than I thought"? How is it possible that 11-year-olds get access to pot? Maybe some of you thought, "Geez, I wonder what medical condition these kids have." The truth of the matter is, most of us don't think about medicine when we hear the word marijuana. I admit, I'm embarrassed to admit, that up until 2 years ago, I was completely misinformed about marijuana. And I think many of our population is today. I remember vividly in sixth grade being ushered into the auditorium to see a government-sponsored documentary about marijuana. It was the most scary thing I'd ever watched. People jumping off buildings, car crashes, it was mayhem. But not once was there a mention of the possibility that cannabis was useful as medicine. To be honest, in retrospect, I'm a little angry about the propaganda that our government is putting forth, even happening today. My big idea worth sharing is that medicinal cannabis can be the healthcare success story of our lifetimes, but only if we all engage in learning the truth and ask our federal government to end prohibition of cannabis. I'd like to introduce you to my twins, Addison and Cassidy. Believe it or not, today's their birthday. 11 years ago today, only a mile from here, they were born and came into our lives. Happiest day of my life. I love the date too. January 23rd, 2004. 1, 2, 3, 4. Unfortunately, Addie and Cassie suffer from a very rare genetic disorder called Niemann-Pick type C. This horrible disease is more commonly called, or what we call it, is childhood Alzheimer's. Their little brains are drowning in cholesterol. They're missing a protein that allows them to process cholesterol both in and out of their brain cells. The cause is neurodegeneration. They can no longer walk, and they can no longer talk. We were told that Addie and Cassie would be lucky to see their 12th birthday. After reeling with this devastating diagnosis, My wife and I dedicated ourselves to finding treatments for our twins in their lifetime. We gave up successful high-tech careers in Silicon Valley, and we became research philanthropists, raising money for research, and ultimately we became biotechnology entrepreneurs developing a compound. The compound we found was cyclodextrin, and we found it with the help of an amazing group of scientists, researchers, and physicians from all over the world, including right here in Reno. Every week, the girls get an infusion. It's 8 hours long. It goes into their bloodstream, the cyclodextrin. Every other week, like yesterday, the girls go to the hospital and they get a lumbar puncture in their spine in order to get the cyclodextrin to reach their brains directly. We think that the combination of those two routes of administration are slowing down the neurodegenerative progression and hopefully maybe even stopping it. Addy and Cassie were the first little pioneers to try this scary treatment. I can tell you as a parent, with no one in front of you paving the way, it truly is a scary moment. Thankfully, more than a couple dozen kids around the world, including a few at the NIH, are now engaged in further science and research on this experimental treatment. But the treatment doesn't seem to help with their seizures. As a result of the neurodegeneration, my kids have seizures almost daily. A couple years ago, they were way more than daily. There were many a day. We started giving the kids traditional pharmaceutical medicines for their seizures. And they worked. Some of them worked, some of them didn't work. But the big problem was most seizure drugs cause your kids to become zombies. The whole purpose of the drugs is to essentially take away the stress or the triggers that cause seizures. We had heard about a father in California that it was treating a young son who was intractable seizures, seizing constantly all day long. And he was using cannabis medicine. We became interested. We contacted him. We learned more about the drug. Ultimately, we decided to pursue cannabis in earnest. Did you know that the cannabis plant was used in as early as 2900 BC in China as medicine? Did you know that we in America were using, in the 1800s, for a century, we were using cannabis to treat a number of afflictions? Unfortunately, in the early 1900s, as you all probably know, cannabis was prohibited and subsequently demonized and turned into a war. It's a shame. It truly is a shame. But we became convinced that the oil would work. So we set out to find a supply of oil. Certainly, cannabis has been legal in the great state of Nevada for almost a decade. Surely we could just go out and buy some oil and give it to our kids. Not true. There was no oil available in our great state. So we set out to do it ourselves. First, we got physician approval to do the treatment of cannabis, and then we became caregivers, licensed caregivers in the state of Nevada, which allows us to cultivate and make extractions, oils, from the cannabis plant to give to our kids. Every day, three times a day, the girls get a little oil like what you see here. This oil is extracted from a very special cannabis plant that's high in cannabidiol, or CBD, as we call it. Unfortunately, this oil by itself doesn't even completely, for our children, stop their seizures. So we still use a small amount of pharmaceutical medicine, but we use less. We've reduced the number of drugs the kids take, and we've reduced the amount of dose from the few drugs we do give them. And consequently, our kids are not only having fewer seizures and shorter seizures, they're also bright-eyed and happy children. Again, they're no longer little zombies. This was great progress, but I thought to myself, holy cow, there are 2 million epilepsy or seizure disorder sufferers in the United States. Who's going to help those folks, those kids, those adults with these disorders? And at that moment, we decided to take what we had learned for our children and turn it into a commercial business here in the state of Nevada, which was just preparing to allow that to happen. And as Kylie mentioned, we've endeavored to do so and are now licensed to grow, extract, and sell, dispense cannabis here in Nevada, the state of Nevada. Someday, the federal government will end prohibition. But how many lives will be lost potentially or severely affected in the meantime? How many kids with seizures like mine will move their families, will uproot from their homes to move to Colorado or Nevada to get these medicines? How many cancer patients will be denied access to inexpensive and effective medicine to treat the side effects like pain and nausea that come with chemotherapy. There is a groundswell of folks like me who understand the potential of cannabis, and I'm grateful for that. The ironic thing is some of my family and friends, including most particularly my own mother, are still not convinced. My mother is worried that the free access to cannabis is actually a threat to society, and that perhaps the medicinal value doesn't outweigh that threat. And she sees the medicinal value in her grandchildren. The problem, I think, is that really we just don't have enough hard evidence yet to convince the skeptics. There just isn't enough science and research to back the foundation that the medicine's working, the medicine's effective, that are useful for large populations of people. That's not to say that research doesn't exist. There's a mountain of evidence that the cannabis plant is useful. But there's not a lot of clinical science, hard clinical science to that effect. That's the conundrum. That's the chicken and egg problem. Until the federal prohibition of cannabis ends, until we take cannabis off the schedule of harmful drugs like LSD and methamphetamines that have no medicinal value, until we remove cannabis from that list, which is insane that it's on that list to begin with, until we remove it from that list, research can't take place. If I came to the University of Nevada Reno Medical Center tomorrow with a $1 million grant to study cannabis, I would likely not have success. It's not that the scientists don't want to study the plant. It's that they are fearful of losing federal funding. It's because they'd have to deal with the DEA and other regulatory agencies at the federal level, which is a complex and expensive process. This is one of the many tentacles of the prohibition of cannabis that actually prohibits us from moving forward. My own personal experience with cannabis, along with the evidence, the science that I know about, makes me absolutely certain what I shared with you earlier. Cannabis has the potential to become the big healthcare success story of our lifetimes, but only if we allow it. Here at Incassi in a more recent picture. For those of you who are still skeptical, perhaps for those of you like my mother who still worry about the societal downside of cannabis, I ask you to look at this picture and consider the following. By limiting access to cannabis for parents like myself, you're forcing me to make a decision between the lives or well-being of my children and going to jail. How is that a fair or rational set of thinking in modern society? Our 16th president, the famous 16th president, had very strong feelings about this subject. He said, prohibition goes beyond the bounds of reason and that it attempts to control a man's appetite by legislation and makes a crime out of things that aren't crimes. A prohibition law strikes a blow at the very principles upon which our government was founded. This was Abraham Lincoln. And he said these words before we had the experiences we had with alcohol prohibition or with cannabis prohibition. Someday, the federal government will spend the money on research. Someday, the NIH will actually be actively pursuing cannabis as a treatment. Until that day comes, a large group of us have come together and formed a nonprofit to organize and fund clinical research in cannabis in the private sector until we can use the academic institutions. We call the foundation People Can in honor of advocates like myself who over the last several decades have been saying what I'm now saying and whose words I didn't listen to until my own situation demanded it. Never in her wildest imagination, would my wife have thought that today she would be a cannabis advocate. She was also misinformed, let's say, about the plant until we needed to learn. Neither my wife nor I would ever believe that our young children would become the next generation of cannabis advocates. I'd like you to meet them. Please give a birthday welcome to my wife, Chris, and my daughters, Addie and Cassie Ample.
Hi.
Would it be unkind to ask if we could sing happy birthday? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Cassie. Happy birthday to you. Yay! Good girls.
I'm Tracy Beans, host of the new podcast, Dark to Light, with Frank and Beans on Radio Influence. It's a new show about politics, but not the way you're used to. What we talk about is actually true. And it's also stuff they don't want you to hear. So we bring it to you weekly. All the intrigue and spin and double talk spelled out for you right with my co-host Frank's special flavor of commentary. Don't miss him. He's an experience. So join us. Dark to Light with Frank and me, Tracy Beans, drops each Friday on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.